Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now! You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions and listen to the show live. You can contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic: should a man have more than one wife? One might think if females outnumber males, that it would be logical, or at least a strong argument, for males to have more than one wife. Yet, the numbers do not suggest that females disproportionately outnumber males. I was kind of surprised about that myself. Even so, maybe it's an ancient tradition, and who's to say that one cultural practice is better than the other? Is it right or wrong or bad? Is it simply culturally relevant or a personal thing? What do you think? Just for your information, worldwide, there are 107 boy babies born for every 100 girl babies. This is a skewed ratio partly due to sex-selective abortion and gendercide, the killing of female infants in countries such as China and India, where males are more desired. Basically, because male babies are presumed to have a greater income potential. So, back to TT's comment. There appears to be a selective shortage of females in areas where males are more valued or preferred due to their economic potential. That would support the idea of polygamy, having more than one spouse, male or female. In this case, female. If countries representing 37% of the world population did not practice gendercide, there might be more females than males. China is 20% of the world population at 1.35 billion. India is 17% of the world population at 1.2 billion. Africa is 15% of the world population at 1 billion. That's just for your information. So from Independent News, Mr. Paul Valley says, what exactly is polygamy? Having more than one husband and or wife, though technically when there are more women to one man, that is properly called polygyny, P-O-L-Y-G-Y-N-Y. Polygamy is spelled P-O-L-Y-G-A-M-Y. When a woman has more than one husband, that is polyandry, P-O-L-Y-A-N-D-R-Y. It takes many forms across the globe. In some cultures, one wife is shared by brothers. In others, a father and a son have a common wife. In others, a man has many wives, up to 11. In the Erisi region of Ethiopia, in many, a widow is inherited by her dead husband's brother, father, or even a son by another wife. How common is it? In 1998, the University of Wisconsin surveyed more than 1,000 societies. Of these societies, 186 were monogamous. Some 453 had occasionally polygyny, that's one man, many wives, and in 588 more, it was quite common. Just four featured polyandry, where the woman has more than one husband. Some anthropologists believe that polygamy has been the norm through human history. In 2003, New Scientist magazine suggested that until 10,000 years ago, most children had been sired by comparatively few men. Variations in DNA, it said, showed that the distribution of X chromosomes suggests that a few men seem to have greater input into the gene pool than the rest. Now, that's very interesting right there. It's like their primate forefathers, it said, that's for you evolution people, were at least mildly polygynous. So, polygamy It is very, very common amidst the Muslim communities of West Africa. In Senegal, for example, nearly 47% of the marriages are said to feature multiple women. It is relatively high still in many Arab nations. Among the Bedouin population of Israel, it stands at about 30%. According to the Salt Lake Tribune, as many as 10,000 Mormon fundamentalists in 2005 lived in a polygamous family situation. You know about the Mormons. That's here in Salt Lake City in the United States. So what are polygamy's origins? It's most common in places where pre-colonial economic activity centered around subsistence farming, which requires lots of manpower, Africa being a prime example. High levels of infant mortality may be a factor. When many children do not survive past the age of 5, a family needs more than one child bearer to be economically viable. So you need to produce a lot of kids to live because you got to farm that land. So then there is war. When a lot of men die, having more than one wife boosts the population most swiftly. The more wives a man had, the more military and political alliance he could forge. Now, that may sound crude to some people, and it may sound like a sin to some other people, but apparently this is the way they made things happen, that things that they needed to happen occur at certain points in times of different cultures. And, you know, where does politics come in? Marrying widows was a social strategy for ensuring that orphans were cared for. So, you know, the husband, head of the household, being a male, dies. In order to care for that family, you marry the widow. So you may have your own wife, but you marry the widow. So the Prophet Muhammad, who had monogamous marriage for 25 years until his first wife died, married many of his other wives, 9 in total, because they were war widows. The Quran ordains that a Muslim can marry up to 4 wives, but only if he can care for them all equally well. Many traditional African societies had a similar custom of widow inheritance to keep the extended family and its property together. Through the centuries, other political leaders have seen similar advantage. In Germany, in 1650, the parliament at Nuremberg decreed that because so many men were killed during the 30 Years' War, every man was allowed to marry up to 10 women. That's 1650, y'all. In 2001, President Bashir of the Sudan urged men to take more than one wife to increase the population, arguing that it was the huge populations of China and India that had brought them rapid economic development. So here we go back to economics and politics and multiple wives. Why? Because apparently there's some things that can happen, but have you many wives that can't happen if a wife has many husbands. One man with 10 wives has the ability to produce 10 children. One woman with 10 men only going to produce at least one child. Of course, she could have 2. Those 10 could have 2 or triplets, but we're just talking about at least they had the capacity to produce more, a man with 10 women. So this thing with multiple wives in terms of increasing your military, which in those days was an important period because we still have military. You know how important the military is. If you didn't have a population, you wouldn't have a large population, you're not going to have a large military. So the larger the military, the better, especially in the time, a period where they didn't have a lot of technology, when actually combat was done hand in hand, sword and sword, stick and stick, brick and brick, or whatever they was using at the time. You know what I'm saying? So back then, that would make some sense now, you know. And I'm not advocating for multiple wives, and I'm not advocating against it. I'm just sharing some information here. So why did the whole concept of having multiple wives die out? Here's what he says. Christian missionaries tried to stamp it out in Africa. Some Marxists reckon it was because the system of property ownership it promoted conflicted with European colonial interests. So, is it undergoing a revival, a little? Some anthropologists suggest, as part of Africa's kickback against colonialism and European starting to rise back up, the new breed of Pan-Africans are arguing post-modernly. In Israel, a former chief rabbi has campaigned for polygamy and the practice of the polygish concubine. Now, that goes back to biblical times. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. So, is there anything to say in defense of polygamous marriages? He says, yes. It's a more honest way of behaving than hiding mistresses and illegitimate children, as many men do in Europe and America. That's a slam on Americans and Europeans. Promiscuous behavior and having illegitimate children out of wedlock, not claiming them or claiming them. Marrying widows ensures that a society cares for its orphans again. So you means that you are assuming responsibility for that woman and her children who may not be yours, who may or may not be yours. So polygamy is a way for ancient societies to reassert themselves in the face of Western cultural imperialism. Then he says, no, this is why it's not good. It's completely at odds with the ideal of gender equality that is at the heart of a modern society. It sends out the wrong message about the transmission of HIV and AIDS. I don't even get that part right there. Having many wives and on the wrong message about transmission of HIV and AIDS. Because you have, I'm assuming that the wives are monogamous with their husband. And so, I don't know. You could argue that a woman having more than one husband is a good strategy for checking the world's population growth. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. I think there's 7 billion people on the planet. And there's some people saying that they need to get rid of, no, it's more than 7 billion. But anyway, they want to get rid of, they want to reduce the Earth's population. And that is one way of doing it. If you only, like I said, one man and 10 women can produce at least 10 children. But one man and one woman, he can produce 10 children with that woman, but he's only going to do that every 10 months or something like that, if that's going to happen. But one man with 10 women can produce in 1 year 10 children. So, yeah, I guess so. If you want the population, reduce the population, stick to one woman because she's only going to have at least one child at a time. You know, we know we have twins and triplets and things like that. We're not trying to be technical and exact. There's always exceptions. So, Provocative Thought said, things that might be used to argue the point of polygamy. Polygyny. Because polygamy is a man and a woman having multiple, a man or a woman having multiple spouses. So, women cannot rule out the paternity of a child if she has multiple suitors. Mama's baby, papa's maybe. We all heard that saying before. So if the paternity of a child is important for whatever reason, lineage, inheritance, kinship, or medical reason, then that if a woman only has one man, that serves that purpose to identify those things right there. If paternity is important to the father, the mother and the father, maybe that's an important issue, who the father actually is to some people. And I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just throwing it out there. If that's important to you, then it makes sense, that the woman only had one man, but the man could have more than one woman because paternity won't be an issue as long as this, you know, there's no infidelity. Even though some people may view the 10 wives or women, concubines, wives, and whatever as being infidelity. Men can impregnate multiple women or wives with no question of paternity, barring, again, infidelity. So one man can reproduce with multiple women and more children at the same time. If he mates with 10 women, he can produce at least 10 children, as I said. A woman who mates with 10 men can produce at least one child, definitely not 10. So that's an argument for polygyny, not polygamy. Things that might, and I'm just throwing these things out there. I'm not advocating one or the other. Just putting it down. So what does the Bible really teach of monogamy? Now, I'm not trying to have a Bible class, so we're going to try and, you know, go through this real fast. I talked because a lot of the religions of the world, most people are either Christian, under the Christian umbrella, Hebrew, Israelite, Jewish, or Islamic. Those are the three major religions on the planet. And you have a lot of Buddhists and Hindus. So the clearest evidence that monogamy is God's ideal is from Christ's teaching on marriage. In Matthew 19:3-6, this passage cited the Genesis creation account, particular Genesis 1:27 and 2:24, saying, the two will become one flesh, not more than two. So if you are a Bible enthusiast, Christian, Catholic, you might come to this point and say that this would be a very strong argument against having more than one wife or even more than one husband. Another important biblical teaching is the parallel of husband and wife with Christ, which makes sense only with monogamy. Jesus will not have multiple brides. The 10th commandment, you shall not cover your neighbor's wife, singular, Exodus 20:17, also proposes the idea that there is only one wife. Polygamy is expressly forbidden for church elders, 1 Timothy, and this is not just for elders, because Paul also wrote, each man should have his own wife, and each woman her own husband. So if you have your own, that means that that's a singular kind of thing Paul is saying. We're not getting into an argument about who's Paul, what's real, anything. I'm just quoting what the Bible says, what this gentleman is saying in the scriptures says. The only example of godly people is also important. The example of godly people is also important. Isaac and Rebecca were monogamous. They were often used as a model in Jewish weddings today. Other examples were Joseph and Asenath, and Moses and Zipporah. And the only survivors of the flood were four monogamous couples. Polygamy's origin and consequences. There's some consequences for this polygamy, even though it happened. So it's very important to remember that not everything recorded in the Bible is approved in the Bible. Consider where polygamy originated. First in the line of the murderer Cain, not in line of Seth. The first recorded polygamist was the murderer Lamech in Genesis 4:23. Then Esau, who despised his birthright, who caused much grief to his parents by marrying two pagan wives. God also forbade the kings of Israel to have many wives in Deuteronomy 17:17. Look at the trouble when Israel's kings disobeyed, including deadly sibling rivalry between David's sons and his different wives, 2 Samuel 13:1-2. And Solomon's hundreds of wives helped lead Solomon into idolatry. So What about godly men who were polygamy? Abraham and Sarah would have been monogamous apart from a low point in their faith when Hagar became a second wife. Note how much strife this caused later with Ishmael and Isaac and their descendants to this day in Genesis 16:21. So he's using the scriptures to say to support the idea that it may have happened, but it caused a lot of problems. Jacob wanted only Rachel, but was tricked into marrying her older sister Leah, and later he took slave girls at the sisters' urging due to the rivalry between the sisters. Jacob was hardly at a spiritual high point at these times. So David, when he added Abigail and Ahinoam in 1 Samuel 25:42, also Hannah, Samuel's mother, was humiliated by her husband Elkanah, other wife Peninnah, because of Hannah's previous barrenness. 1 Samuel. Why did God seem to allow it then? God's permitting of polygamy seems more like a case of divorce, which God tolerated for a while under certain conditions because of the hardness of their heart. But it was not the way it was intended from the beginning. Matthew 19:8. Whenever the Mosaic law had provisions for polygamy, it was always the conditional. If he takes another wife to himself, Exodus 21:10, never an encouragement. If he takes, not take. That's what he's saying. He's making a distinction. So God put a number on the obligations of the husband towards the additional wives, which would encourage polygamy. In view of the problems it causes, it is no wonder that polygamy was unknown amongst the Jews after the Babylonian exile, and polygamy was the rule amongst the Greeks and Romans by the New Testament times. What does the Bible say about polygamy? It says, word at work, the Bible pattern, the biblical pattern for marriage is that it is between one man and one woman. Again, Matthew 19. God took two people and united them together. Same thing, right? So what do we think? Man, we're far from biblical times, but we're still of the scriptures. What do you think? You think that more than one wife is okay or should be permitted for dire circumstances, not so that a woman is not led to be alone and her orphan children are to be cared for along with her in a respectable manner as somebody's wife? And I know that sounds like a contradiction, but here we got it going on. Deuteronomy 25:5-10. In this situation, a man was commanded by God to marry his brother's wife if his brother died without a son and an heir. This was to ensure that the family name was continued and that the widow was provided for. God and his grace instituted this principle so that none of his people would fall into poverty and shame because of death or human selfishness. This is after the war. Corinthians 1:39, Paul says that if a woman's husband dies, she is free to marry whoever she chooses as long as he is a believer. So Paul kind of like changed it. So it was his idea to, kind of like break that cycle. You don't have to marry your husband's wife. You got a wife, you don't have to marry her. She can choose another husband. Another thing said that now the overseer must be above reproach. This is about the heads of the church. The husband of but one wife, temperament, self-control, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but Gentile, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? That's 1 Timothy 3:2-5. So this is saying that no one who is married to more than one person can be involved in church leadership. So what does Jewish law forbid multiple wives? From Mr. Silverberg, the Torah does not forbid man from having multiple wives. Abraham, Jacob, David, and Solomon are notable examples of biblical figures who wedded more than one wife. As previously stated, there were some problems. The previous author said there was lots of problems associated with these guys having these multiple wives. Rivalries and things like that amongst siblings, favoritism and things like that. The Torah does not outlaw polygamy. Approximately 1,000 years ago, the noted German scholar Rabbi Gershom, the light of the diaspora, banned polygamy. This ban was accepted as law by all Ashkenazic. Those are the German Jews, they speak Yiddish, but was not recognized by the Sephardic. Those are the Jews from Portugal, Spain, and the Yemenite Jews from Yemen or Russian area. They didn't recognize this. So that's very interesting. So that happened just 1,000 years ago that they banned polygamy. And as previously stated, it was kind of under attack when the Europeans basically came into Africa in power and force. So when they first came to colonize Africa in force, so they were changing the customs of the people. A number of reasons were given for Rabbi Gershom's ban. It was instituted to prevent people from taking advantage of their wives. It was intended to avoid potential infighting between, same thing that we're talking about that happened with Solomon, with all his wives and all that stuff, and David. Prevent infighting between rival wives, which may also lead to the transgression of a number of biblical violation. Rabbi Gershom was concerned lest the husband be unable to provide properly for all his wives, especially during the difficult times of exile. A ban was intended to avoid the inherent rivalry and hatred between wives. Apparently, I heard that, that you can marry many women if you're able to treat them all equally the same, which is kind of unrealistic. You can't treat, if I have four wives, I can't treat them the same. I can't love them the same. They're different people. I don't even see how that's possible to love four people and treat them the same. You have four children, you cannot treat each child the same because they all have different personalities, and so you can't exactly treat them the same. You can do certain basic things similar with each child, but you might have a child that you can't, trust with money. You know what I'm saying? So you're not going to, hold this money for me. You're not going to leave that money in the hands of that child. So same thing for a wife. She's not good with money. So you're not going to give her the money because the other three are capable of doing it. Just maybe if that is something that was designed to discourage also taking multiple wives also. But if you can't treat them all the same, which is, seems to be an impossible task to me, to treat four people the same way and satisfy four people. That seems very impossible. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to be very difficult to satisfy one person. I don't know. I mean, 50% of marriages, about 50% of marriages in the United States end in divorce. So I can't imagine Americans a lot of Americans just going for more than one wife. You know, I wonder how that's working out. That might be interesting, the statistic on women who have been in multiple wife situations and how that panned out for them. That would be very interesting to know how that, you know, did they stay? Did it work? Did they feel treated, you know, that they were treated properly, you know, equally or anything like that? You know, that would be very interesting. There was concern that a man marries two wives in different locations, which may lead to forbidden relationships between offspring. Well, we had that situation now. We have children by people who, for some reason, we don't tell people that you do or you even know you do, and people end up running into their brothers and their sisters or maybe their first cousin, you know, and, you know, that type of thing. So this was the way to ban having these wives was a way to prevent that from people marrying their brothers and sisters. There's also concern that while it has been suggested that it was adopted from Christian practice and laws to avoid Christian attacks against Jews who act otherwise, this argument has been assailed by many other Halachic authority. I don't even know what that means, y'all. I should have looked that word up. So, as far as Jewish thought is concerned, it was seen that polygamy is not and never was an ideal state. The mystical works are replete with references to husband and wife being two halves of one whole. Interesting. He says, I've never encountered an episode in the Talmud or the Minor Priest which predated Rabbi Gerson's ban on polygamy, which involves a polygamous family. While it is certainly possible that such stories do exist, it is quite apparent that polygamy was never the norm. So we have a rabbi here saying that polygamy was never the norm, even according to his information. For, you know, even though patriarchs in the Bible had many wives and many concubines, and it was not the norm. So when we go to Genesis 2:18, Yah, which is God, the Creator, declares that it is not good for man to be alone, that he would make a helpmeet, man, a helpmeet. Yahweh declares that man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife. This is the same story we get out of our Genesis. It means that two become one in the marriage. The couple is spiritually, financially, emotionally, etc. one, just as many members of our single body work together as one, like a football team works together as one, a basketball team works together as one, a hockey team works together as one, okay? As a unit, they are to serve Yahweh and teach the fruit of their flesh. What is polygyny? What does the Torah say about multiple marriages? Well, let's see, Deuteronomy 25. If brethren dwell together and one of them dies and have no child, then the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to her to him to wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother unto her. That's his duty, to marry his brother's wife. But I hope your brother marries a nice a nice woman, man. Deuteronomy 21:15 said, if a man have two wives, the other hated, and they born him children, both the beloved and the hated, and if the firstborn son be hers that is hated, then it shall be, when he maketh his sons to inherit that which he hath, that he may not take the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, which is indeed the firstborn, but he shall acknowledge the son of the hated, for the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he had. Now, I guess some people might look at that and say, well, this is, you know, the Creator is condoning and looking after the child of a wife that's hated. So what's he doing with a wife that he hates anyway? You know, I don't know. That seems kind of contemporary time-ish. I guess that's a never-ending story. People get married and then they hate each other. Or maybe he married this person out of some kind of obligation, but he does not like her. Maybe he did that out of that obligation, you know. So what do you think? Do we have anybody who wants to add to this conversation about multiple wives? Here we are in contemporary time. Of course, we have laws that in this country where having multiple wives, polygyny, is, you know, not allowed. You can actually, you know, that's against the law. So you think that it's up to the individual, you know, in terms of whether or not you think that it's okay. Not whether or not it's a law, because we know we have many laws. But what do you think? Do you think that you could be comfortable in a situation where you have more than one wife? I'm assuming they live in the same roof. Or maybe they live on the same block. I don't even know how that's supposed to go down. But it's very interesting, you know, like, because you have to deal with jealousy and different people's attitudes. And because you can't be with four of them at the same time. I don't imagine. I don't know. But I'm thinking if you have four wives, you're not sleeping with four women at the exact same time. You have four women that you do mate with, but you're not mating with them at the same time. That's what I'm thinking how it goes. So that's, I don't know. And I'm not trying to shed any bad light on anything. So David had at least 8 wives and 10 concubines in 2 Samuel 3:14 Chronicle. And yet he was not disobedient against Elohim in these things, except when it came to Uriah and his wife Bathsheba. Now, you know the story of David and Bathsheba. He sent Bathsheba's husband to the front of the lines to be killed at war while he took his wife back at home. So, now that's a violation. On the other hand, we have Solomon, who clearly disobeyed Yah when it came to multiplying wives unto him. So he's saying Solomon disobeyed the Creator when it came to how he got the wives, where he got them from, not the fact that he had multiple wives. Because Solomon's foreign wives and their foreign gods turned his heart from Yahweh. So Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. So what was Solomon thinking about? I'm trying to imagine that. 700 folks. What did he do most of the time? Because if he had 700 wives, is he not obligated to 700 people? It's 365 days in a year. So what is he doing? 300 concubines. 1 Kings 11:3 says, yet Yahweh only judges him for his marriage of foreign women. That's what the author here is saying. 1 Kings 11:1-2. Deuteronomy 7:1-4, and the idolatry which resulted from these marriages. So he had 700 wives, 300 concubines, but God has only punished him or judged him for his idolatry with the wives that encouraged him to commit adultery. So I guess the argument here is that, you know, hey, Solomon had 700 wives. That's an astronomical amount of wives or women to have been with in your lifetime, 700. Maybe that's an exaggeration. I don't know. I'm not trying to say the Bible not true. It's true or not. I'm just saying that's a big number. 700, that's 1,000 people. That's like, well, I guess so. Wilt Chamberlain did it. He said he had 1,000 women. So I guess, all right, Solomon, he's a king, so I guess that can happen with a king. When I think about it, It's a lot of folks, 700 wives, that's something else. So it says that Yah did not condone fornication and thus often required a man to marry a virgin woman after having sex with her, regardless of his marital status at the time. So, they're saying that the Creator, if you have sex with a woman, you have to marry her. Sex does not constitute marriage. You have to actually marry her. So you have to take her as your wife. That's what marry means. You take a woman as your wife. So even if you don't consummate her, you take a woman as your wife, that's your wife. Sex is the consummation of the marriage. So the multiple wife situation may offer covering a single woman who has no other covering or protection, as we talked about that before. So it seems like the multiple wife situation is to prevent sin or behavior that's against the Creator, against man, any kind of sinning and stuff like that. So if you're married, it's okay. Even though, like we were saying earlier, if your marriage is between one man and one woman, then if you have another wife, some people view that as a sin. You got 2, 3, 700, that's interesting. So a concubine, we didn't even get into that because that's a person that's not even married to you. It's a person, One dictionary.com said the concubine is a woman who cohabits with a man to whom she is not legally married to. Regarded as a socially or sexually subservient mistress. But the Bible's definition of a concubine, I'd say, is a little different. Paramour, concubine, paramour, kind of like running the same definition. What does the Torah say about concubines? First, we must understand that a concubine relationship was not sexually immoral or fornication. So we got some cultural things going on here. Second, a concubine was considered a wife. Yes, she was married to the man. In most cases, a woman is called a concubine in one part of Scripture and a wife in another. See the following examples. David, 10 concubines are called his concubines and his wives by Yahweh. 2 Samuel 12:11, 16:21-22. Keturah is called Abraham's concubine in 1 Chronicles 1:32, but his wife in Genesis 25:1. I don't know. I'm not even going to touch that. That's what this man is saying right here, that a concubine is another word used interchangeable with the word wife, or has been used interchangeable with the word wife in the Scriptures. So, why does Solomon have 700 wives and 300 concubines? That's I don't get that. And I guess I'd have to study a little more to even get into what's that all about. Get some of the Israelite brothers to explain some of that to me. So what do you think, listening audience? Two wives, one wife, what do you think? Why the Quran allows Muslim men to have more than one wife? Now, it seems to me these religions are very close in terms of what they believe and some of the practices. As you can hear, I'm repeating some of the same scripture, some of the same ideas about, the three religions. Basically, there are some situations in which it is advantageous to society to have men marry multiple wives. And for this reason, polygyny is practiced by many religions and cultures. So, the social phenomenon, there we have it. And as we have already seen in question, as seen in answer to questions, polygamy is permitted in the Bible too. Here, we will see that the Quran permits only a restricted and limited form of that practice. Only 2% of Muslim marriages are of this nature. Notice the Quran permits but does not command a man to have four wives. So they're saying it, not commanded to have multiple wives in the scripture, but you can if you take one. Multiple marriages are heavy relationships, are heavy responsibility on the male. I can imagine that, and I can't imagine it, but I hear that. It is not a pleasure trip, as some people may assume. Some even imagine all kinds of sexual exploits involving a man and his wives all together. However, such activity is not permissible in Islam. A man must divide his time equally amongst his wives. He may, for example, spend one night with each wife on a rotating schedule. If a man cannot maintain justice in the treatment of his wives, the Quran stipulates that he is to have no more than one wife. That's that principle where if you can't treat them all the same, you can't have more than one. So you be prepared for that. Polygyny provides a solution to some of life's problems. When there is a shortage of men, for example, after a devastating war, remember? Many women will be unable to find husbands. Even they did this in Germany in the 1600s. Most women in this situation, given the option, would rather be a co-wife than no wife. If one maintains a strict monogamy in such a situation, moral depravity is bound to result. So, question, if any women are listening, would you rather be a co-wife than no wife? I can't answer that question. Anybody out there want to call in on that? How would you rather be? This guy says most women would rather be, and that might be true for a lot of women. So we have these verses called the Noble Verses. Noble Verse 4:3 says, if ye fear that ye shall not be able to deal justly with the orphan, marry women of your choice, 2 or 3 or 4. But if ye fear that ye shall not be able to deal justly with them, then only one. So if you can't deal justly with them, you can't have favoritism, you can't be like with her all week, you don't see her like once a month. Can't do that. That's whether it's sexually or not, it seems like to me, because you can't disappear with one person and then show up with other ones in like 15 minutes. Hey, how y'all doing? Where's the cornbread? You know what I'm saying? Where's the food? All right, with the kids. Okay, then you go back to the new one, you know. So, I don't know. This is very interesting that to see that so many people subscribe to polygyny. Country, we don't subscribe to it, but we behave in that manner. You understand what I'm saying? We don't have wives, but we have many relationships and relationships that produce children outside of other, you know, relationships that we have that produce children. You know, some of us, and some of us maybe did not produce children. And in order to be exempt from that situation, you have to have been a person who has only been with their present wife or the person that they're with right now. You only have to have been with one person in your life. Other than that, you kind of like participate in the same type of situation. So I want to say, call us. Don't forget to press 1 if you want to talk. But we have approximately 4 minutes to go. I'm going to try to wrap it up. So what we have here is, polygamy is not encouraged in the Holy Quran, nor Allah Almighty had allowed it because he really liked it. He was clearly careful to highly discourage polygamy to mean by telling them, but if ye fear that ye shall not be able to deal justly with them, only marry one person. You can't deal justly with them, only marry one. Now the question is, can you deal justly with more than one person? Can you treat two people justly? So, I mean, that might be a contact between you and the two individuals, you know, because maybe one person might not require the same amount of attention as the other, as you do have with children. And then you have some children who work very independently, then you have another child who needs constant redirection. So same thing with a wife. Not that she needs constant redirection, but some people need more attention than others, you know, and they demand it. We don't have anybody who want to talk about that. I was hoping to have somebody to add to what I'm saying. But, I can't imagine being married to more than one woman. You know, one is kind of difficult, you know, just having that situation. It's a beautiful thing. I'm not speaking against marriage. But I'm just saying, I'm two, three, four. That's something else. Okay, so, you know, you can comment on our website at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. If you don't contact the show tonight, feel free to say to reach out to us on the website. I want to thank Retalk Productions for allowing me to host the show. I want to thank the creator for allowing me to be. I want to thank all you listeners and callers.
You will not be able to stay home, brother.
Those who download the show.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out.
Good night.
You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.